Radio SBS en français, en ligne et sur votre smartphone.
Aaron Wood is a Melbourne City Councillor and Chair of the Environment Portfolio in Melbourne. He is joining me today to talk about the original Melbourne Urban Forest Project, which has been enforced to protect Melbourne's tree. And also, he will talk about Melbourne Environmental Programme. So, hello Aaron, how are you today?
I'm very well, thank you. Thanks for having me.
It's good to have you here. So, could you introduce the Melbourne Urban Forest for those who never heard about it?
Yeah, sure. It's an urban forest strategy is essentially, as the name says, it's about trying to grow a forest in the city. But we're trying to flip that a little bit and have the city in a forest. And it's not really what people think about when they think about cities, a forest. We've got 77,000 trees in public land. That's in our streets and in our parks and gardens that we manage. There's about 20,000 trees on private property in the city of Melbourne as well. And we're talking really about kind of the central business district and the inner suburbs. That's what Melbourne is, not the greater metro Melbourne. And the urban forest strategy came about because we were suffering a severe drought. So it was called the Millennium Drought. Unfortunately, it was a 13-year drought. And by about 2009, what we saw is that looking at our beautiful trees, and we were known as the garden state for a long time, we were known for our beautiful parks and gardens, is that we were looking at losing about 40%, or 40% of our trees were either dead or dying at that stage. And that was going to be a huge change to the city of Melbourne. We set about implementing and designing the urban forest strategy. It's got a few targets. One is to double the forest canopy cover from about 22% forest canopy cover to about 40%. We want to do that over the next 20 years. That's, I guess, for a few different reasons, but one of the major reasons is the urban heat island effect. So we know that the inner city of Melbourne, because it is so built up with all the buildings and roads, is about 4 to 7 degrees hotter than surrounding areas, that by doubling the forest canopy cover, we know we can cool the city by about 4 degrees. So we've been planting 3,000 trees a year since 2012. So we planted 12,000 trees is part of the urban forest strategy already. We know that we've got to plant probably about another 30,000 trees. So we plant 3,000 new trees each year at a cost of about $1.5 million. But the other big part of the urban forest strategy is to diversify the species, because, you know, in some parts of the city, one species makes up, you know, 80 or 90% of the tree species. So we've got some real diversity targets as part of that as well, where we have trialled 15 new species in the last couple of years to see how they perform. And we've got a target of no more than 5% of one tree species in the city, a target of one tree species representing no more than 5% of the overall all species. So there's a diversity issue there. And the reason being, we need an urban forest which is much more resilient to disease, which is much more resilient to the climate as it changes as well.
Okay, and a part of the program is to get a map of all the trees in Melbourne. So when did you create this map? How long did it take to give an ID to each tree in Melbourne? So how did it came all about?
Yeah, it's this has probably been the most popular part of the urban forest strategy. In fact, it's gone all over the world. And the Urban Forest Visual has had over 40,000 hits on its website. So it's very, very popular. And what it started from was when we were talking about the urban forest strategy is if we didn't know where every tree was, in effect map every tree in the city, then we couldn't manage them. So every tree, the 77,000 trees that we manage, has a unique ID. And that was put onto the Urban Forest Visual website a couple of years ago. And the reason for that was because what we had anticipated was that any resident could then jump on. It goes literally down to their street level so they can see what trees are out the front of their house. And they could report if a tree had been vandalised or it had dropped a limb or perhaps it was suffering due to drought conditions. And our officers could quickly go out, find that tree, replant it if it was necessary, or put in place a management regime to make it healthier. But what we realise is people are really passionate about their trees, and we started receiving love letters and all sorts of funny emails. You know, people apologising because their dog had peed on the tree this morning. You know, dear, you know, Elm ID 754, you know, thanks for making my day so good. And it was just amazing. So it still performs the task of, you know, being easily identify trees, but It's a bigger thing. It shows that people do love their trees, and literally emails from all over the world. And yes, it's a bit of a gimmick in the sense of people writing love letters to their trees, but the other part of that urban forest visual is in those emails we've received people saying, how can we help? How can we get involved in the urban forest? And even people are saying, how can we donate to the urban forest? So the next step for us is, and that'll be coming out to be announced shortly, is the Urban Forest Fund. So I'm really excited about that because of all that interest and all those emails and all the website visits and our citizen forester program, which came about as a result of that, where, you know, everyday citizens can get out and measure trees and get involved in their management. Is the next step will be, for want of a better term, adopt a tree so that people can actually donate and know that they're supporting the urban forest for Melbourne.
Oh, nice. And there is also workshops around your program. So where they were about?
Yeah, the workshops were really interesting and really key to the success of the program. So the urban forest strategy sits up quite high and it sort of has targets for the overall municipality. But we knew if we wanted to make this work, we had to get really strong support from the community. And so under the urban forest strategy, there's 10 forest precinct plans. And they literally go down to the level of a suburb. And we then went out into each of those suburbs and ran different workshops. And we gave them all the information that we had. We gave them information on the urban heat island effect. We gave them information about the current tree species, about what had happened during the millennium drought, you know, about future visions for the city. About the different species that we had at our disposal to plant. We also gave them a pretty, it's a pretty horrific piece of information that on the Black Saturday bushfires in 2009, we lost over 170 lives in the bushfires due to the bushfires. But what's less known is that in the week leading up to those bushfires, we had a heat wave where it was over 40 degrees for the whole week. And what happened there was over 370 lives were lost due to heat-related illness and stress, mainly in the very elderly or sick or very young. So I guess the kind of hard side of this is that we know that our urban forest, yes, it looks good and it's beautiful and people are passionate about it, but it's the first line of defence that we have against the urban heat island effect, which is a killer. It's a silent killer, but it's a killer. So we went out into the community and we gave them all this information, and these were whole day workshops where hundreds and hundreds of people were giving up their Sundays to come along and be part of it. And they co-designed the urban forest precinct plans, which sit under the urban forest strategy. So that's led to a greater ownership of the urban forest. And I think we will have kind of, you know, had a real win once it becomes not the city of Melbourne's urban forest, but, you know, Melbourne's urban forest, the people's urban forest. And I think that's the critical thing. You know, the urban forest workshops, the email a tree, you know, the urban forest visual on the map, you know, having tree planting days that people can come out and get involved in, you know, having those citizen forester programs. That's all part of a much bigger strategy to give a lot greater ownership to people of their urban forest.
Yeah, of course. Is there a permanent staff for the Melbourne Forest Program? What do they do every day? What's the daily life there?
Yeah, it's a really good question. So there is a permanent team, and we've got some of the world-leading foresters in this space, and you know, open space experts, or water experts. All of this expertise sits within council, and they're constantly working on what the next thing is. So they're strategically managing the tree planting operations for our city, but all of the on-ground work is done through contracts. So similar to a lot of large local governments now, our officers are managing those contracts to ensure all the targets are met each year. But all the strategic thinking and the best practice and the learning by doing and teaching others happens within that team. So, you know, sometimes the weeks are really, you know, quite different where with the Urban Forest Project, we actually developed the How to Grow an Urban Forest. And that's a 10-point plan which any local government can pick up and use and develop their own urban forest strategy. And cities like Darwin and Brisbane, 15 other local governments across Australia have already picked up our strategy and then implemented their own urban forest strategy. And so we had a How to Grow an Urban Forest workshop, and we had over 50 local governments come to Melbourne to learn from our officers, you know, how to develop their own urban forest strategy. And that's, you know, everything from the type of species and working through the scientific background. But it also goes to how do you build a case for your elected officials to believe that an urban forest is something they should invest in? Because when you talk about planting trees, you know, people often put that just in an environmental kind of box, but we know it has huge health benefits. We know it has environmental benefits. We know it has economic benefits. One of the really amazing things for us was that during the 2014, we had a heat wave in January, and we actually did a survey of our retail premises just in the CBD. So not building sites, not other industry, just retail. And they were losing close to $10 million a day during that week over 40 degrees because people didn't want to come to the city and shop. It was too hot. So, it has so many benefits and, you know, not to mention making the city look beautiful, but even things like, you know, cleaning our air and water, these are all essential services for the world's most livable city.
Yeah, of course. And you speak about other cities in Australia who pick up your strategy. Does any other city in the world who wants to implement the same thing? Or
definitely. Yeah, the great thing about it is lots of world cities are actually implementing an urban forest strategy. You know, Johannesburg has had a huge urban forest tree planting program. Lots of cities in China are embracing the urban forest strategy. So the great thing is that Melbourne is part of quite a lot of global networks. So ICLEI, the Environmental Network for Local Governments, got, you know, thousands of local governments as part of it. Mike Bloomberg's C40 network, which is primarily focused on climate change, there's been a lot of sharing of Melbourne's urban forest strategy. In fact, we won a C40 Climate Leadership Award for the urban forest strategy. So that's now been spread far and wide. And the last one that we became a member of was the Rockefeller Foundation 100 Resilient Cities. And that's actually about building resilience, not just in environment, but socially and economically and right across the board. And the urban forest strategy has just been picked up as one of the actions that will not just be in the city of Melbourne, but is now going to be across all 32 councils in metropolitan Melbourne. So I think that's really where the success will be, that it's great that City of Melbourne has these, you know, really ambitious targets, and, you know, doubling the forest canopy cover is going to have so many benefits. But imagine when it's not just our council and it's not just City of Yarra or City of Stonington, but 32 councils in Metro Melbourne doing this. That's when you'll get the sort of change that I think we need to see for a much more resilient city.
Yeah. And so are you the only city in the world where people can send emails to trees, or...?
I think we are. I do know that the emailer tree was something that there was a lot of interest. So there may have been some other local governments that have picked it up, but we were certainly the first city, and it was amazing because when it happened, we were just, you know, blown away by, you know, we were receiving emails from every country across the world. But not only that, we weren't just receiving the email a tree, we were actually receiving a whole host of new interest in the urban forest strategy itself. So that was really pleasing. And this is part of a much wider network of action. So, you know, we've got an open space strategy, which is about, you know, getting 24 hectares of new open space and parks and gardens at a local level so that we have the places to plant these trees with the urban forest strategy. We've got the total watermark strategy, because if you double the forest canopy cover, that's going to use a whole lot more water. Mm. So the total watermark strategy, now 25% of the water we use is recycled water or storm water, and we've got a target of 50% in the next in the very near future. So all of these strategies have to work together for it to be successful. And the global attention we've received is fantastic. But I think the one thing that local governments do really, really well is they share with each other. You know, they're competitive about who's the greatest city in the world. And, you know, we talk about being the world's most livable city 5 years in a row. but by the same token, you know, when we come together with Sydney or, you know, Toronto or Vancouver or Copenhagen, the sharing that goes on is amazing. And in fact, Mayor Hidalgo in Paris is just undertaking a whole suite of environmental initiatives. And I was lucky enough to be there for the Paris summit, COP21. Yep. And the city voice was so, so strong on the environment. And I really genuinely believe that the strength of the city voice, the clarity, the positivity of that voice, I really think, you know, led to a successful outcome in Paris. Obviously, a lot of other action and things was taking place at the national level, but I think, you know, cities are doing a great job in showing what a sustainable future can look like.
Yeah, of course. So what are some of the other approaches for the Environmental Melbourne program? Like, you were talking to me about LED lights in the city.
Yeah, I'm a bit sad to say we were a bit slow to this one. A lot of other councils have already done this, but the pleasing aspect is that we've taken a $30 million loan from the Clean Energy Finance Corporation, and a large part of that will actually be spent on changing 16,000 of our streetlights to LED. That's going to be great for the environment, but it'll save us about $1 million a year in energy costs. So again, good for the environment, but good for the hip pocket. Also, part of that money will be to putting solar on our own buildings. So we're now up over 630 kilowatts of solar on childcare centres, swimming pools, and we'll keep on rolling out that program. The other big one, I guess, too, which we're really proud of, is that we know we've got to change our energy mix in Australia. Brown coal and black coal is still a big power source, and you simply can't be powered by fossil fuel if you want to be one of the world's most sustainable cities. So we've got a target of 25% of our energy coming from renewable sources by 2018. We're sitting at about 10 or 12% at the moment, and we've got things like commercial solar programs and residential solar programs. But what we've done, which is really innovative, and it's another way that local government's leading the way, is we've brought together 13 different organisations, and they're organisations like University of Melbourne, RMIT, Fed Square, Melbourne Zoo, National Australia Bank. All these different organisations have come together. We've pooled our energy consumption, so it's 110 gigawatt hours a year that we'll go to market for. That's enough to power about 28,000 homes. And that tender is open at the moment, so it closes in about another 4 weeks. And that will result in a new renewable energy installation in regional Australia, whether it be wind or solar or whatever technology. But the great thing is, us, along with those 13 organisations, will be able to say, look, that's what we built because we chose to go renewable. So that's the next big one.
And also you changed some of CBD rubbish. They are new and more big. Can you tell us more about it?
In terms of waste management?
Yeah.
Look, we've got a waste and resource recovery strategy, which was endorsed last year, and that's got all sorts of actions. So, trialling new organic processing in apartment towers. Over 80% of people in Melbourne live in apartments, so it's a really important thing we tackle that. So not only we kind of doing solar and changing LEDs, we're then looking at waste. But De Grave Street is a really, really popular laneway in Melbourne. It's where all the cool people hang out, for their lunch. But it also produces a whole lot of organic waste from, coffee grounds and all the food waste. And so what we did is we partnered with all of the restaurants in that laneway, and we installed a giant industrial-scale composter in the basement of one of the buildings adjacent. We also put cardboard and metal recycling in there as well. And now all those restaurants work together to take their waste into that composter. The composter, or the digester, actually turns that waste into compost, and that compost is then used on the parks and gardens in the city of Melbourne. So Melburnians love their coffee, so that's a really Melbourne thing, but it's great to be able to use that kind of restaurant and coffee story to also tell a story about waste and recycling and making sure that we're closing the loop.
Yeah, of course. So what brings you to dedicate your life for Save Environment? I mean,
good question. It's interesting because I'm chair of the environment portfolio for City of Melbourne, but you're right, my whole life has been the environment. I run an environmental education consultancy called Kids Teaching Kids, and we engage primary and secondary school kids in learning about the environment. Been doing that for 16 years, which seems like a really, really long time. But I guess for me, I just think, the environment kind of sits above everything. If you can't breathe your air or drink your water, it doesn't matter how much money you've got in the bank or, how big your skyscrapers are or whether you're called the world's most livable city. If you can't breathe your air or drink your water, then, there's not much more to life, really. So for me, I just find it such a fundamentally easy issue when you look at the long term, that many of these supposedly good economic decisions, if they're viewed over a much longer period, suddenly seem like not such a good idea. So I'm a real advocate of the true sense of sustainability, and that's economic, social, and environment, but making sure you view things over the long term. And when you do that, renewables and making sure your river systems are are healthy and ensuring your buildings are as green as they can be, and you know, all these things become pretty simple.
Yeah, so that's a nice last goal. So thank you, Aaron, for speaking to the SBS French program today.
Thanks very much for having
me.
Cheers.
Vous aimez le programme en français? Continuons la conversation sur notre page Facebook. Rejoignez notre page Facebook et partagez vos pensées. facebook.com/SBS French.